On in, grab a cold Missouri beer, and enjoy the games year-round.
Who's ready for Maryland-style crab cakes? At Surf and Sirloin, it's a true crab cake. No peppers or onion, no filler, just a little egg and breadcrumbs to bind the cake together. The crab cake entree is 8 ounces, of which 7.5 ounces is crab meat. That's how little filler is in there. Surf and Sirloin, located Southwest Quadrant of Manchester and 270, and serving only USDA prime beef, which you won't find at the grocery store. Surf and Sirloin. For reservations, call 822-3637 or through the app Open Table or online at surfandsirloin.com.
Biggie's Restaurant and Bar has been a staple of the community for over 27 years. At Biggie's, they pride themselves on service and great food. They make all of their dressings, marinades, and pasta sauces in-house. Biggie's is famous for their garlic cheese bread, steak sandwich, and their homemade white French dressing. Biggie's is family-friendly and also provides catering, whether it's for 5 or for 500. Located at 3332 Watson Road, check them out online at biggiesrestaurant.com.
Looking for extra cash? Jewels on Hampton in St. Louis Hills pays some of the highest prices for diamonds, gold, silver, semi-precious stones, coins, flatware, and currency. Located at 4506 Hampton Avenue, just 3 blocks south of Chippewa. Learn more at jewelsonhampton.com or call 314-752-5000. That's 314-752-5000. Jewels on Hampton, paying some of the highest prices.
Johnny Londoff is a proud supporter of the Free Dotem movement and wants to get you involved in Dotem's freedom. Just ask for Johnny the Third or Chip when calling or visiting and mention Free Dotem to receive $500 toward the purchase of a new or used vehicle. Speaking of, Johnny Londoff needs used cars and prefers to buy them from customers. They're looking for all makes and models and will surprise you with what they're offering. Don't forget to mention Free Dotem when you call Johnny Londoff.
Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear a pitter-pat? And that happy tune is your step. Life can be so sweet on sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with those blues on parade, but I'm not afraid. This rover.
You want to see some emotion? We're Stanley Cup champions, baby!
Crossed over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of the street.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the large morning show in the afternoon as people like Dan Strauss and thousands of other hardcore hockey fans try to come down from the high they were on all weekend. Now, I chose to leave the door. It's hot in here, so I left the door open.
Right.
So if you hear any, mutterings, rumblings, it's just people who have no respect for the professionals in the building and want to talk. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you with us. This is going to be a very interesting day today, and I'll tell you why in a moment. It's also just another sleepy, dusty Delta day.
Was it 3rd of June, another sleepy,
oh, that's right. It's the 3rd of June. You know we forgot to do that Thursday? Did you realize that?
Did we?
Yeah.
No way.
As soon as I left, it hit me. Didn't do sleepy, dusty Delta day. Now, one other quick thing. Gloria Vanderbilt has passed away.
No, that's the wrong Gloria.
I wanted to play it because you never hear this song.
Yeah,
you never hear Gloria.
I know.
And Gloria Vanderbilt's passing gave me an excuse to play. By the way, Laura Branigan, was cute. She was a cutie. She died.
She was pretty good looking.
52. Way too young. Yeah. So the other big thing about today, you know, we never introduce the people to the Playhouse. Maybe I need to just tell you who all is here. Limestone Phillips, say hello to everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Tim Woodburn, say hi to everybody.
Hi to everybody.
Dan, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
And then coming along later will be Josh Bauman in the 4 o'clock hour, talk a little tech talk.
Josh Bauman is another huge hockey fan.
Well, that's not very nice to say. Yeah. Some of us have weight problems.
Yeah, he's big bone.
I'm with Tim. That's
kind of insensitive.
I think he'd appreciate that.
Why don't you call him albino while you're at it?
Yeah.
A person with albinism.
By the way, Anderson Cooper is Gloria Vanderbilt's son, and he's about, if there's borderline albino, he's got to be close. He's the palest guy I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And he's got that white hair that makes him even whiter.
Right.
To his credit, though, he's seems to be a hard-working guy who I guarantee you doesn't have to work, because Gloria Vanderbilt had a lot of money, and now he has that money, and I'm sure had some of it before. We're going to do the Burke segment, and then I want to jump right into something. Today is the 25th anniversary of the Bronco Chase, O.J. Simpson.
Oh, right.
Limey was 9 years old.
Yeah,
when that happened. And were you over there?
Yeah, I was over in England then, and that news story made it to England.
So it was a big deal there, too.
It was huge. And, it was, at the beginning, it was just a professional football player, I think, you know, kills his wife and then went on some weird chase.
No, he didn't.
The fact
that, the trial?
Well, the fact that he was found innocent, that is what just turned it into an international story.
Well, in our lifetimes, we will never, ever see a case like this where so many things point directly to guilty, 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 evidence like, and then he's found not guilty. And I think a lot of people know why. And we'll get into that in a minute. But first, let's get to the Burke segment first. And I spent a considerable amount of time today, which I never do on this show. And I brought you some stuff that I think people 25 years later will find very interesting, because so much has been forgotten that came out. So I'm going to remind everybody. And then when I'm finished, if there's anybody out there who still, after 25 years, still thinks that guy is innocent, I don't know how in the world you could. And if you say, well, the jury said, no. The jury found him not guilty for one reason and one reason only. And we'll talk about that, too. But first, does anybody have anything to say?
Ooh,
I get a head nod from Tim Woodburn and sort of a yeah from Dan Strauss.
I do.
Let's,
yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Man, all of us.
Whoa.
A hat trick. See, I knew that term. Three? That's a hat trick.
There you go. Yes, it is.
Let's start with the guy who shook his head first. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Woodburn. Tim, it's all yours.
You're welcome. You've been doing something. You've been saying something.
That
apparently.
You?
No. You've been saying something, and I've been saying something, that apparently our combined almost 120 years on this earth, we've been saying this word the wrong way.
Ooh, what is it?
It's the second month of the year.
February.
Yeah, but you don't, but I lazily say February.
I say February.
Okay, and I say February.
Most people say February, right? Which is really wrong.
Okay, well, we're both wrong.
What is it?
Because Blues coach Craig Berube at the rally on Saturday schooled all of us on the appropriate way to say it. Right.
I heard that. They came together at some point, and it all started to work out. And again, it's leadership and character and hard work. The road to January, February, and most of March.
Hang on, so it's
February.
It's February.
February.
Yeah, play that. Yeah, I like to learn how to say that.
There you go.
To January, February, and most of March.
Okay, I knew the players had been drinking. Apparently, so had Craig.
Oh,
had
so from now on, it's February.
Yeah, February.
Wow.
January, February, and most of March.
I've said many times I'd like to be corrected when I'm wrong, and now we know.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I'm sure everybody has a favorite moment of the parade, but when Braden Shen at one point, I have two favorite moments. The first one was Braden Shen taking a miniature Stanley Cup from somebody on the side of the road, and then taking a huge swig out of whatever was in it, I assume was beer, and then leans his head back and then spits it back on the woman.
Sprays it all over.
He spits it back all over the woman. I mean, if that doesn't say St. Louis, I don't know what does. And Jordan Binnington, God love the kid. He, you know, he was really, you know, calm, cool, and collected throughout the whole. Everybody said he was a bad interview. He's got no personality and everything else. Well, put a couple Bud Lights in him, and we saw what his personality can become. And he's the first athlete, and maybe the last athlete ever in the history of post championship interviews to answer the way he answered the following question. Most players say, "Where are you going, Tom Brady? I'm going to Disneyland. Where are you going? You know, right. Albert Pujols? I'm going to Disneyland." Right. Reporter asked Jordan Binnington, "Jordan, are you going to Disneyland?" Jordan goes, "No."
Yeah. Who says he's a bad interviewer?
No.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
Nope.
I think that's the only time I've ever heard an athlete answer that question in that way.
Oh.
So those are my three favorite moments of the parade. The new pronunciation of the second month, Braden Shen spitting beer back on the woman who handed him beer. And she loved every minute of it, I might add. And then Jordan Binnington just...
He probably still hasn't showered.
Like Marsha Brady when she got kissed by Davey O'Brien and Brady Bunch.
Davey Jones. Yeah.
Didn't shower for like, you know, of days.
Yes.
Never saw one Brady Bunch.
Not one. Wow.
Yeah.
All I know is Marsha.
Yeah.
She was the president of the prom committee or something, and she wrote Davey Jones, and he ended up coming to the prom.
And he kissed her on the cheek, and she walked around and said, "I'll never wash again."
Yeah.
I'm right with you, Frank.
Never saw Brady Bunch?
No.
Ever?
Not one episode.
That was must-see TV.
Hang on. Don't tell me. Shirley Jones, was she the mom?
No.
Florence Henderson.
Florence Henderson.
That was a Partridge.
It was a guy. Jones. They never discussed how the spouses died. But
Robert Reed was gay. Right, yeah. They revealed later.
It was a guy that had three sons, and something happened to the mom. And the mom had three daughters, and something happened to their dad.
Here's a story about a man named Brady. I still never watched it. I knew the Gilligan song. I never saw that either.
You never saw an episode of Gilligan's Island?
No. I know there was a rich guy and a hot chick and another hot chick and that goofy the Bob professor. Denver and then the professor and then the skipper. I know all that. I just never watched it.
Wow.
It looked stupid to me.
Wow. It was stupid.
Did you have more?
No, that was it.
All right. We're going to move right along. Thank you for that. That'll come in handy this February.
February.
And now, Dan Strauss, everybody. Dan, you can take it away.
Thank you so much, Frank. My favorite part of the parade was when the players jumped out of their cars and jumped out of whatever they were in and just started mingling with the crowd and hanging out with the crowd. I've never seen that in a championship parade. And so the players were having just as much fun. My favorite quote was from Ryan O'Reilly. Do you have that? I think you had that.
Did you just see one about emotion?
About the love for the city of St. Louis?
Yes.
Yeah, I ran that in the newscast just now.
Yeah, that was one of my favorites. And Ryan O'Reilly had this Zac Brown hat on. He looks really cool. And then I found out.
Clint Eastwood hat. Why do you call it a Zac Brown hat?
Oh, really?
Was it?
I don't know.
It was a black flat out fedora. It was just circular and it was just flat all the way around.
And I also found out that he's a big time guitar player. Ryan O'Reilly is, and he went to a Boston music shop, and he was messing around at the Boston music shop and playing guitar and stuff, and met this kid who was actually a Bruins fan, and he ended up buying this kid a guitar while he was there.
Wow.
For him.
Yeah. So, but my favorite quote was from Ryan O'Reilly.
Is this the one?
I think so.
I was saying this earlier at German Parade, though. I said this is a city of amazing hockey fans.
Hockey.
Amazingly nice people. And amazing drinkers as well. They can handle their stuff. It's awesome. I love it.
I heard that live. I was watching it. I heard him say that. That's real flattering. St. Louis is a bunch of drunks.
Yeah.
Did you have anything else?
No.
All right, limestone, it's all yours.
All right. Mine isn't really that, isn't that positive or upbeat or anything. I had to help out a friend on Saturday night. This friend of mine works in restoration, right?
Like flooded basements?
Yeah, flooded basements, burned down houses and things like that. And on Friday, I believe, he saw a dead body for the first time.
Oh.
And it completely just
freaked him out.
Yeah.
Did he find it when he was cleaning up a basement or something?
No. This, I'm not going to say where it happens because I don't want to get anybody in trouble or anything like that. But apparently he saw the dead body because this was a burn victim. Mm. This person had died in a house fire.
Mm.
And apparently when they were moving the body from either the coroner's van or to the medical examiner's van, they did it outside of the house, you know, in the subdivision. And the wind blew the sheet off.
And the head,
whatever was covering it.
And the head fell off?
Well, no. He said that he just saw, like, this twisted, mangled, burnt-up body. And it completely just... I mean, he was about in tears.
That would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, obviously, Saturday night, you know, what do men do in a traumatic experience? We go and we get drunk, right? And it was a lot of fun. But I told him, because I've never seen a dead body. I have no idea how to handle anything like that, right?
Like a casket, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's really not a dead body, though. That's
exactly.
Like a mannequin.
Yeah, I mean...
It's been doctored up.
When it's in a funeral home, in a funeral parlor, you know, everything's nice. They're wearing nice clothes. The hair's done and everything. This guy saw a mangled, burnt body.
Mm.
So, you know, I kind of told him, how do you... he was asking, you know, what do I do? And me, I just told him... Because he said that it's just constantly going through his head, just this vision of this dead body just in his head. And I told him not to try and shy away from it, you know, not to try and bury it down deep, because eventually it'll just come back up even 10 times worse.
Maybe the reason he keeps seeing it's out of guilt. Maybe he started the fire and killed that person.
I've seen three dead bodies in my life. Two were family members. I saw them, like, literally the moment that they died, or right after they died. And then I saw one in the course of being a PI of a girl who committed suicide, and I had a younger sister who passed away when she was 25, what strikes me the most about seeing that was that she died with her eyes open.
Mm. Yeah,
you
weird.
Know, it always made me wonder.
Weird.
When you die with your eyes open, do you know you're dying?
Right.
When you're going, because you're obviously awake, right? Mm-hmm. Unless it's just some type of bodily reaction.
I got lots of death questions. My wife doesn't want to hear them. She doesn't think about it. She does not allow herself. I think about it all the time.
What do you mean, like a death question?
Oh, no, I wonder about death all the time. And we'll never have an answer because dead people can't talk. But I always wonder, like Tim said, just before it happens, I think a lot of people do know, oops, here it comes. You know, they do because they, goodbye, gone.
Well, yeah, no, I wasn't laughing at that.
I always wonder how much of what people are taught and learn to believe through religion, or whatever, how much of it is really true? And it's frustrating because we'll never know. It's a waste of time to think about it. It really is.
Well, because you always have in every TV show that deals with death, you've got the two options. One, you're going to have somebody saying that they see this, like a white light or a tunnel, or two, there's nothing.
Didn't you watch the movie Ghost?
I've seen it.
That's how it's supposed to be.
Okay.
Is that it? Oh, cool.
That bad guy, that Willie, that killed Sam.
Patrick Swayze?
Yeah, Patrick Swayze. He was the one, the Willie, when he got hit by a car or whatever, he got killed by the demons came and got him.
Yeah, and drug him into the shadows. I remember that.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else?
No. I just, if anybody's got any advice I can give him or anything like that, I'll tell him. I just told him to just kind of just think about it when it's there in your mind, and eventually it will fade away, and, you know.
Oh, I don't know.
You're like a psychologist.
Well, because, you know, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of, is that if he's going to think about it, eventually he will stop thinking about it.
You think
it.
Most people have seen a dead body? Tim, you said you have.
Mm-hmm.
And let's put it this way. Not a dead body, bedside. You know, like my father-in-law. But I mean, just turn a corner, oh, there's a dead person, that kind of thing.
Frank, have you seen a dead body in that situation?
Yes. When I was in Edwardsville, Illinois, when I was about 19, I guess, 20, and there was a car accident at a four-way stop. And it wasn't a horrific, it was just a sort of a minor crash, but I was right there, so I got out of my car, and I knew there were two elderly people in one of the cars, and I could see that the man, his head was bleeding, and, you know, it was quite an impact. So the old woman was in the passenger seat. I went over to open the passenger door to see if I could help her out. She fell out dead.
Oh.
She fell out right at my feet, dead, right on the pavement. Yeah.
Ooh. At your feet?
Yeah, her body... When I opened the door, it's like if you just leaned to your right and just fell out right onto the pavement head first, and it was obvious she was dead.
Oh,
and
man.
it wasn't so much of an impact. I think it's just because of her age, probably had a heart attack or something.
Right. The first joke of yours, I've known you almost 2 years, the first joke of yours I ever tried to retell was the joke about the Polak who came upon on the accident scene.
Polish person.
The Polish person who came upon the accident scene and his friend had been decapitated.
One of my favorites.
That was the first joke of yours I ever tried to retell. It's a good one. I don't know if you've told it more than the one time you told it when I first started. You told that like the first 2 weeks, three weeks I started with you.
Time to bring it back.
I don't know. Pretty soon. Just a thought.
That's the one I'm trying to think of if I've ever seen another. Oh, yes, absolutely. I cannot forget this. I used to ride with the cops a lot,
mm-hmm.
and one of the two police officers I rode with was in the city. And so one night, it's like 2 or 3 in the morning, because we'd ride in the middle of the night, the worst parts of the city, and he gets a call, 10:40, that gibberish, and he goes, hey, you want to go to a murder scene? I go, sure, let's go. So we do, and that's the other time. I saw the guy in his living room, face down, pool of blood,
oof.
Shot in the right in the face, oof. Dead, shot by a guy and killed.
How was that for you?
Saw that guy. It didn't bother me. That just doesn't bother me.
Huh.
No, I slept like a baby. It just. I asked
my neighbor used to. My neighbor is a mortician, and I asked him, and he would have to go on the weekend. Sometimes he would have to work and go pick up dead bodies. Yeah. And I asked
him. That's a very different kind of person who can do that job.
Yeah. And I said, you know what, I think I'd like to go with you sometime to pick up a body. And he said,
no, you wouldn't.
I won't take you to anything where somebody committed suicide, where there was a murder, where there was this, where there was that. I won't take you anywhere like that. I'll take you to a nursing home. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do that. I want to go to a nursing home. But and then I thought about it, but he said he'll never do that to anybody, because he said the stuff that he's seen when he's gone in for suicides or murders or anything.
You have to have a certain kind of psychological makeup to see that and go on with your life and not have it traumatize you.
One thing that I never even realized about until I saw a movie on it a couple of years ago was when you've got horrible situations like that, there's somebody that has to go in and decontaminate the area and clean up, all
this
stuff.
There are companies that's what they do.
Yeah, there are, right?
It's like murder suicide cleanup squad. They go in and pick the brains out of the drapes. I'm not kidding.
Yeah,
and they're private companies, right? Yeah. They're not like owned by the city or the county or anything like that.
And I would charge a fortune to do that.
My father's last wife, her father died, lived by himself on Santa Fe, New Mexico, and he fell. He lived by himself.
Hey, look who's here, Tim Woodburn.
No, we've already introduced him.
I just wanted to do it again.
He fell and hit his head on a marble coffee table and bled out and died. His housekeeper found him about 4 days later.
Oh.
So hazmat had to come in and, like, clean this thing up and, whatever. And then they had to rip out flooring and all this other stuff. They moved into the house and kept the table.
Kept the table?
I said, Dad, don't you think that's a little morbid to keep the table and then live in the house? He's like, well, that's what she wants. She wanted it was a family heirloom, family keepsake, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on. All the other furniture, fine. But the table, really? They kept that table. And then I went and visited him at Christmas, and I wouldn't put anything on it. I didn't even go anywhere near
Yeah, but there
table.
Was no blood on it or anything,
No, it's
right?
it was just creepy.
Now, see, that I wouldn't have a problem with that. It's just a table. It doesn't hold any spiritual anything. I mean,
I've got two texts. One raises a pretty good question. The other one is a fact. Apparently, Gloria Vanderbilt is not leaving her son, Anderson Cooper, any money at all.
Why?
He's on his own. He doesn't need it.
Do they not get along?
And no, he doesn't say. The text just says, apparently, since he was very little, his mother told him that he would not be receiving any of her money, any inheritance.
I think if your last name is Vander anything, Vander Schmidt, Vanderbilt, You have no choice but to be rich. You can't be a poor person named Vanderbilt.
Yeah, you're right.
You can't.
You're right.
You're sort of, you got to go out and get rich.
Well, the question is, and this one kind of got me thinking, like, what are the qualifications to be a mortician? I mean,
there is schooling.
Well, I imagine there would be
schooling.
But
it's almost always in the family. Funeral homes, they're handed down. Everybody I've ever known in the funeral business, it was a family business.
Yeah,
Dad was in it. Grandpa was in it. Because who, I'm sure there are a few, but who would say, of all the things I might want to do, I think I'll prepare bodies, and I'll go pick up bodies. No, not
the guy that I know, his family was in the business, And now his daughter, his one daughter, is in the business.
Well, they got plenty of money because I also don't know one poor funeral home owner.
Yeah, right.
They,
it's not like they're going to go out of business.
Nope.
You know?
Nope. Yeah. Everybody's going to die. Did we close the Berks?
No, okay. Yeah, I think so. Okay. We're done.
Close it again. Double, triple locked. Okay, folks, here's what I'd like to do, if you'll allow me. Oh, we got a couple of calls. I guess we should take them. I don't want to be rude. John's been holding the longest. John, welcome to 590 The Fan. How are you?
Hey, I'm aiming the PM as usual.
Oh, thank you, John. Hey, good to hear from John again. What's going on, John?
Yeah, good show. Hey, I want to ask you guys a question. You remember those hockey player back in the 80s? One of the Blues players, Skate, came up and cut the jugular on the goalie. I think it was Buffalo.
That was Rick Mahar.
No, it wasn't.
I've seen the video.
It was Steve Tuttle was the Blues player, and the Buffalo goalie was Clint Malarchuk.
Yeah,
listen to these guys. Listen to Tim Woodburn.
And Malarchuk almost bled out, but the Blues trainer actually saved his life.
Well, he was at the end of the ice where the Zamboni came on the ice, and that was the only they said that's what saved his life was that the doctor could get to him because that if he'd been at the other end, the doctor would have had to get down to him all the way down the ice and. By the time he would have got there, he would have been dead.
Oh man, that was the worst I've ever seen.
John, how about that for a quick answer? How about that from Tim Woodburn and Dan?
That's really good. That's excellent. That's a good recall. Hey, by the way, I used to work in a morgue, and one time I went to into the morgue to assist a doctor, and I saw two shoes there, but the feet were missing, or the feet were still in the shoes. And I went to the table, and I saw I asked the doctor, "What happened to their feet?" They said, "Oh, they're still stuck in the shoes, in the boots or whatever, you know." So I was like, "What happened today?" It was kind
of
weird.
Somebody has to go in and dig the feet out of the shoes.
Oh, listen, I had a case one time where a guy was working in a grain silo, and I don't know if you've ever been inside a silo.
I worked on a farm. I've been in a silo.
You could fit a full court NBA basketball floor inside a silo.
Yes, they're huge.
They're way bigger than they appear from the side of the road.
Yeah.
And they have these holes in the ground and these augers that move the grain out of the auger.
I did it for two summers.
A circular one, and then there's this like clock hand that sweeps around and it sweeps the grain into the auger holes, and then you know it shoves it out. Well, this guy
that sounds dirty, doesn't it? Your auger hole.
Yeah.
Auger hole.
Well, this guy was in there working with his brother, and he didn't realize that one of the covers was open, and he put his foot down, and their auger was moving, and it chopped his foot off with the shoe in it, and it took the shoe down the line. And his brother runs over to him, and the guy's like. He's like, "I can't feel my foot. Is it okay? And the brother didn't want to tell him, no, it's...
I'll go feel it for you. It's out here.
Well, so they'd send us down the next day to do an accident reconstruction and to take witness statements and stuff and, you know, take video of the scene. So I actually had to climb into this grain silo, and that's steep. I mean, you had to, like, walk down, like, 8 feet of grain as it declined to the ground, and there's, you know, blood all over the ground and everything.
Ooh.
And my business partner and I had a bet on where the shoe... Where would the foot and shoe be when we got there? And, you know, the options being still in the auger or, in the dumpster or whatever.
Box of cereal. Yeah,
hey, I got a prize.
And so I asked the business owner, I said, where's the foot? He goes, I didn't know. Because the ambulance crew didn't take it with them. They took the guy on a stretcher, took him to the hospital. They left the shoe in the foot. There was no chance of this foot getting reattached. I mean, there was no chance of it, right? And so... The guy told me that he called the funeral home and said, "What should I do with this?" And they said, "Put it in the refrigerator, and then bring it to us the next day." And we'll have a disposal fee. So I guess they have incinerators at these morgues, and he had to go down there and take the guy's foot that was still in the shoe in a bag. And hand it to the guy at the funeral
home. I wouldn't
have
paid to do that. I fed it to the coyotes or something.
Oh, well. Sure. Fire at the back.
Yeah.
Well, that was my next question. It was corn. It was corn in the silo, not grain. And I asked him, I said, "What is all this corn now contaminated?" He said, "No." He goes, I called the FDA or I called whoever the governing board was, and since it's feed for animals and not for human consumption, they said, "You're fine."
And that's exactly what I worked two summers on a farm. It was corn, and it was for animal feed. Yeah. That's exactly the
same thing.
There's
corn on this guy's toe.
and it's actually corn.
That was corny.
No, that was good. Hey, that was actually good. Well, I'm sorry, John, we forgot all about you. Yeah, you're still here. Go ahead.
I got to entertain. I forgot what I was saying. I like listening to you guys. Oh, by the way, don't you think Brad Hall, don't you think the Blues could have someone better representative than some old 55-year-old, you know, flatter guy just talking about, "Hey, we went." What does he mean by "we went"? We went where? I mean, what are you talking about? Can you clarify that for me? Hey, good show, guys. And I really enjoy your show, man. I hope you stand here. Thanks, man.
Well, John, thank you. Always good to hear from you.
Brad Hall was just trying to say, because we said, everybody said, "Let's go Blues." And he was trying to say, "The Blues, you don't have to say Let's Go Blues anymore because they won the Stanley Cup. But he was,
I get it.
He had some product in him.
Oh, no kidding. I can tell that.
Yeah. Well, he, with all due respect, I disagree with the caller. You know, could the Blues have picked a better representative? I mean, obviously, clearly Brett Hull was intoxicated during the ceremony, but Brett Hull may have saved this franchise.
With his
popularity and with his dominance of the game and his stardom that brought fans out, because this franchise was in big, big, serious trouble of either moving or folding several times during my lifetime. And he's a big reason why that arena why Enterprise Center got built was because the fandom allowed ownership to come in and have a reason to build a new arena for a team.
Hmm. Barry's been holding a while. Let's get to him. Barry, thanks for being patient. Welcome to 590 The Fan. What's going on?
Well, not a whole lot. And I am AM and the PM.
Well, thank you.
I got two stories for you.
Okay.
When you were talking about people that passed away.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, I had to help carry a friend of mine out of the house. The funeral home didn't have enough help to do so. Huh. I had to help carry her down a whole bunch of steps on a backboard, then help load her onto a gurney, and then take the gurney down the rest of the steps to the hearse.
Mm.
And then the second one was the next year later, my neighbor, she had passed away, and nobody had noticed for 4 days, and we found her in the house face down.
Hopefully it wasn't one of those hot summer days and the air conditioning had gone out for 4 days.
How'd you guess?
No.
Are you kidding?
I am not kidding.
Oh, that's the worst.
You know, I think about that all the time because I'm single. Mm-hmm. I'm overweight. I turn 50 next month. And I always wonder what if something happened to me, how long would it take somebody to know it? And they probably wouldn't know until I didn't show up for this show. Who else would have a reason to,
And if you check. Have a show, we'd all get and we go to your house, we go, I'm not going in there. You go in there. I'm not going in there.
That's exactly what happened to Ralph. I forget his last name, but he was the clerk for the city of Eureka where I live, and he didn't show up for a city council meeting for the first time ever.
Right.
And Ralph Blevins was his name. And they went and right then and there, they said, they called the police, said, go check on him. He hadn't missed a meeting ever. They went to go do a check on the guy, found dead.
Hmm. Well, this person I was telling you about, me and a St. Louis City retired officer who used to work with Tom Ziff.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
And
my very good friend, Tom Ziff.
Yeah, I remember. See, it shows you how long ago I've been listening.
Wow, Tom Ziff. I miss that guy. A lot of people do. All right, Barry.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. So, here's the deal. I can't believe it. We're almost out of time. The hour's almost over. Let me get some business out of the way. And if I'll do some of this now and the rest in the playhouse. I'll tell you what I'm talking about when we come back. This is the 25th anniversary of something that was so astonishing, so shocking. Most of this country was glued to the TV for hours, and I'm talking about the Bronco chase, the O.J. That was 25 years ago today.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Limey was 9 years old.
9 years old.
I thought he was going to kill himself in the...
Well, we'll talk about that, because I'm going to remind people of some things, and when you go back over these things, I don't know how anybody listening in their right mind could still think this guy is not good. And I maintain that before he dies, he is going to spill his guts. I think that for some reason. Well, let's do some business.
He just posted a tweet yesterday saying he's got to get some revenge on some people.
Well, I didn't say revenge. He says it's time for me to get even with the media because he wants to get even because people are saying things about he had never had a chance to respond. Like implying that Khloe Kardashian was his daughter, and then he says, well, I never slept with Kris Jenner. So this is his way now through tweeting to get even.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he used the word revenge. Maybe he did. But getting even with all the gossipers and the media people. If I don't get some business, I'll never get it done because I do want to get into this. First Community Credit Union. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been banking there for years now and do all my banking there. And the invitation is ongoing. And I'm fully aware of the fact that you are not going to drop everything. What time is it? They're still open. And run there. And first of all, you have to close your accounts for your bag now. But I don't expect that too many people are going to right now go, well, you know what, I'm going to cancel the rest of my day, and I'm heading right to my bank to close my account. So tomorrow morning, I'm going to become a member at First Community Credit Union. I know it's that, it's not a priority, but here's what I want you to understand. Anything that you're going to be doing, that most people are going to be doing, like banking, you have to do it somewhere. You have to have a place to do your banking. So why not at least think about and explore the option of doing your banking with the largest credit union in the St. Louis area, the one where every day more and more people are leaving their traditional bank and doing their banking with First Community Credit Union. If you think, well, I'm not too sure about the stability, they have over 40 locations. They're beyond just stable. They're rock solid. And remember, too, why First Community Credit Union was formed in the first place. It was formed as a benefit, a perk, to people that worked at Monsanto. One of the great benefits was that you, and only you as a Monsanto employee, could use this fantastic banking facility called First Community Credit Union. Now, you don't have to work at Monsanto. You haven't for years. Most everybody listening, almost all of you, can, if you want to, become a member. Notice I didn't say customer. You're a member because you belong to the credit union. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, and I seldom mention this, to be honest, there, you say, what's the hitch? Okay, there is a hitch. It costs $1 to belong, okay? There it is. It's out in the open. It's $1 for every account, worth every penny of the 100 pennies. And I think in the end, if you ever have to close, you can get it back. It's no big deal. Now, the other thing you need to know is that First Community Credit Union is actually owned by all of us, the people who are the members, the people who bank there. We own it. It's a nonprofit. It's not owned by some family or some group of rich people that at the end of the year sit around and divide up the profits. No, profits go back into the credit union. That's one of the reasons they're so successful. So, in many ways, it's just like a lot of other places to bank. You can do, you know, checking, savings, debit card, credit card, car loan, home loan. I want you to think about a couple of things, though. Home equity line of credit, for if you're a homeowner, to do whatever it is you want to do this year to make your home even better. New patio, landscaping, LED, landscape lighting, a pool, you get the idea. Home equity line of credit. And if you apply for that before the end of this month, which means you have less than 2 weeks, then for the first year, you get a repayment loan rate of 2.49% for the first 12 months. What a great deal. Also, don't forget wedding loans. Don't forget motorcycle loans. Don't forget boat loans. Okay? I don't hear many people promoting that, but they do. There it is, and so much more. First Community Credit Union, again, over 40 locations, firstcommunity.com. Do we need to break
nope,
or we keep
good.
Rolling? Okay.
Yep.
25 years ago today, O.J. Simpson was in a Bronco, and once the helicopters got the shot of that vehicle, all eyes were on it for, and Tim can look this up, it's the one little tidbit that I didn't look up. I know it lasted quite a while. The duration in time, how long that chase lasted. I want to say it was like 4 hours. That's my guess, something like that. But Tim will look it up. But here's what I want to share with you. I spent a little time this morning looking at various sites and credible news sources and going back and pulling most of it from the actual courtroom documents. But here are a couple of things you may have forgotten. Nicole Brown Simpson's neighbor, a guy named Robert Heidstra, said he heard two men arguing that night, and then he sees this white van or SUV, that would have been the Bronco, rapidly leaving the murder scene. Police found two sets of keys to Nicole's condo in OJ's possession. She had reported a set of keys missing just a few weeks before the murders. They said the killer walked from the crime scene and did not run, proving he was familiar with the surroundings and knew it was safe to walk away. All this gets better. There's a woman named Jill Shively says she saw O.J. Simpson driving his Bronco at a high rate of speed from the murder scene right exactly at the time of the slayings. At 9:37, the night of the slayings, Cato Kalin, remember that loser, said he saw O.J. Simpson wearing a dark blue cotton sweatsuit, the exact same kind of suit that produced the fibers that were found on Ron Goldman's shirt. Folks, this is just going to get better and better, and when we're finished, you're going to reflect back and remember that when this all happened and the verdict came down, we all were just, our mouths were hanging open. Cato Kalin testifies that about 11 o'clock the night of the murders, when he was loading OJ's five bags into the limo for his trip to the airport, there was one bag that OJ told him, the limo driver, not to touch. He loaded it himself. That, of course, ended up being the black bag they're convinced had the bloody clothes in them. And that bag disappeared and was never seen again. And I mean, I know there's a lot of the stuff that you didn't know because you were nine years old. But when we're finished, you won't need to go in a room and deliberate with people. You'll go guilty, guilty, guilty. Limo driver's name was Alan Park. He said there were five bags, and he confirmed what Cato said. And the sky cap at the airport, a guy named James Williams, said there were only three bags when he got out of the car. Two bags were missing. They also saw O.J. standing by a trash can, which led everybody to speculate that he stuffed the bag with bloody clothes in the trash bin. 1 week before Nicole's death, she told her friend Cece Shahane, quote, "He's going to kill me and he's going to get away with it and charm the world because he's O.J. Simpson." Other friends, Faye Resnick and Robin Greer, said Nicole told them more than once, "O.J. is going to kill me." Now, let me stop here and say that in the court of law, none of that holds water because it's just hearsay. That those things alone won't convict you, but it gets so much better. Go ahead, Tim.
The actual chase from the time that Simpson made a 911 call and the highway patrol began pursuit, to the time where he got to his house, because remember, after the chase ended, he holed up in his house for 50 minutes before he finally surrendered. But the actual police chase lasted 2 hours and 6 minutes.
Wow, it seemed longer. I thought it was four.
Well, you know, and actually, I could shorten that to 2 hours and 1 minute because he made a 911 call at 5:51, and the police observed the vehicle and began their pursuit at 5:56, and then he got to his house at 7:57. So 2 hours and 1 minute, and then another 50 minutes when he negotiated his surrender while he was inside the house.
Okay. In 1982, O.J. Simpson threw Nicole against a wall. In 87, he shoved her onto the ground. In 89, he slapped her and pushed her from a moving car. Nicole made her will out 5 weeks before she was murdered. New Year's Day, 1989, police respond to a 911 call. They found Nicole bruised, bleeding, hiding in the bushes, wearing only a bra and sweatpants, crying, "He's going to kill me, he's going to kill me." Nicole's sister, Denise Brown, took pictures, we all saw the pictures, of her bruised body and put them in a safe deposit box. And she tells her sister, "I need proof that he beat me. Without proof, no one will ever believe me. They think he's a hero who can do no wrong." The murders happened right after Nicole rejected his company at their daughter's dance recital. Their daughter had a dance recital. OJ wanted to go. And Nicole said, no, you can't go. That was that night. And they say he just snapped when she wouldn't let him go. When he got to the, I'm going to say got to the house because I think we all know he did it. She had a bath ready and there were candles, floating candles in the tub. Most everybody believes that he knew she was preparing for some late night sex rendezvous and he went into a jealous rage. Now, let's get to the real good stuff. DNA evidence proved that five blood drops found near the killer's footprints at the Bundy murder scene belonged to O.J. Simpson. Let me repeat that. Five drops of blood near the footprints of the killer were O.J.'s blood. Evidence also showed there was a blood trail. It was his blood from the Bronco to the Rockingham estate, including one drop of blood behind the Bronco on the street, one on the driveway just inside the Rockingham gate, three more on the driveway leading to the front door of Denise Brown Simpson's residence, and five on the floor of the foyer, one on the bathroom floor of his house. When he got back home, he still was bleeding because he cut himself in the process. The DNA test proved the spots of blood on the driver's door of the Bronco were OJ's. DNA test proved the three blood stains found near the rear gate of her home belonged to OJ. DNA test proved that in at least one drop of blood found at the murder scene, the chances of it belonging to anyone other than OJ Simpson are 1 in 170 million. This DNA stuff you don't mess with, it's accurate. Oh, by the way, he also took a lie detector test at the police station and failed. These are the things I think people forget. DNA tests showed that on the blood evidence alone, there's only 1 out of 57 billion chances that he's innocent. 57 billion is 10 times the current population of the entire world. At the Bundy premises, his blood was found at the exact spot where the murders were committed. Drops of his blood led from the driveway into the entryway of his Rockingham home. Blood on socks in his bedroom matched his and Nicole's. They find blood in the shower and the sink of OJ's bathroom after the murders. Three stains on the Bronco's console were a mixture of his blood and blood of both of the victims. Folks, when you put all this together, there is one and only one conclusion, and they didn't reach it. And I'll tell you why most people think that's the case later. There was another console stain that was a mixture of his, Ron Goldman's, and Nicole's blood found on the driver's side carpet. Her DNA was found on his socks. That would occur in out of only 21 billion people. DNA from Ron Goldman's blood was found on the Rockingham glove. Cellmark is the nation's largest private DNA lab. They ran 11 genetic tests on the drops found at the crime scene and on a drop of blood in OJ's house. Every single test matched it with OJ's blood. They found fibers on the knit cap that was found at the murder scene. They matched the fibers in the OJ's Bronco. Fibers on the bloody glove found behind the OJ's house matched the carpeting in his Bronco. Isn't it amazing? You know, when I shave in the morning, you know what I think about? I use an electric razor, and they're a little tiny, tiny, you can't even really see them, just little bits of hair,
yeah,
that I sometimes have to get out of my shirt and just brush my shirt. All they need is one of those, you know, head of a needle sized pieces of whisker. Boom, gotcha. DNA. None of us are smart enough to clean up a murder scene. There's just too much left behind. I got more of this. We're going to get to Josh Bauman's here. Johnny Londoff's coming up. But I have more, about halfway through. And I haven't even gotten to the good stuff yet. Remember those shoes, those Bruno Maglia shoes? Said he didn't own them, the ones at the murder scene. He said, quote, I wouldn't have a pair of those ugly ass shoes. Then they produced all these photographs of him wearing those shoes.
At a Buffalo Bills alumni party.
Yes.
A Buffalo photographer went through his archive photos and found a photo of him wearing those shoes.
Yeah. And then they started to find others. Okay, I'm running late. I got to get moving here. We got more.
Can we have more in the playhouse?
Oh yeah, we can have more anywhere you want it, because I think it starts to get really fascinating now. Okay, Thompson Price. I had a chance Friday to go out and visit what is under construction and will be the new showroom out in Chesterfield Valley. This is going to really, really tick a lot of other kitchen and bath people off, because Thompson Price has put a lot of thought into this new showroom. Now, the reason you want to not put off your plans to remodel your kitchen and bathroom, and the reason you want to get to the current showroom, is, but you can stop that because I'm going to run a little bit late into the news, is that pretty much everything in that showroom is going to be sold so they don't have to move it. I told you, I bought three, paid for them Friday. I bought three new toilets from the current showroom. And I know it sounds weird to say you're really excited and looking forward to a toilet, but I am, because I only have one of these in my house now. It's called a Tornado Flush by Todo. If you've ever flushed a toilet on an airliner or a cruise ship, yeah, that's what this is like. So I'm going to get three more of those. There's a lot of money to be saved at the current showroom, so get in there. It's in De Pere, less than a quarter mile east of 270 on Manchester. This is going to be very exciting. We're looking at probably sometime mid to late July. Probably late July, that's the target, to open the new showroom. And it's going to make this whole kitchen and bath remodeling process so easy for not just you, but if you have a decorator, interior designer, contractor involved, all of you or any one of you. You're going to love it.